You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everyone, welcome to another installment in our Well Met interview series. I'm Danny Donuts, and today I'm here with SippyWee94. How's it going, SippyWee?
Oh, it's going great, man. Just playing some Hearthstone, kind of waiting for a new expansion, and all the other games coming out, like Gwent and Artifact and stuff coming out right now.
Yeah, aren't we all, man? I'm super excited.
A lot of stuff going on in the card game scene right now.
Yeah. So you were on this podcast about a year ago, but for the people who may have missed your first appearance, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a psychology student from Denmark, 23 years old, and I've been playing Hearthstone since the closed beta. So I've been playing it a lot, a bit on and off at some point, took some breaks. And when Wild was introduced, I swapped to mainly playing Wild, and I did that for a long time until early this year, where I made the swap back to Standard to try and see how far I could push it in terms of like tournaments and try hard stuff. And I've been enjoying actually every part of it, being a casual, being a try hard in Wild and a try hard in Standard. So that's why I am. I've also been playing a bit of other card games. At some point I swapped to Gwent, tried that out, was also really fun. So I'm just like got card games.
Yeah, I remember you seeing some tweets from you about some super high finishes in Gwent and doing that, and that's pretty neat as well.
Yeah, is it like, and I think it's really cool to transition your skills from one card game to the other, see differences and similarities. It's actually really cool. And that's also why I'm very interested in seeing how the new Gwent that is coming out soon, how that will be, and also Artifact. Because every time you go into a new card game, it feels like you're learning a lot more about card games in general. So you will improve in every card game just by doing that, I think.
Yeah, the skills are definitely transitionable. The last time you were on the podcast, it was one of my Wild Takeover episodes, and it was you, me, and Oddragon, but that was about a year ago, and since then, you've transitioned into the Standard scene, and you're on Team Barrage, am I correct?
Yeah, that's true, everything.
Yeah.
So everything you say is true.
Nice. So how has that been? How has that transition been?
Well, it actually... It was a very weird period of time because it started out by me playing the Hearthstone Wild Open number 2, which was, I think it was in February or something. And it was really, really a very fun experience to try hard with a couple of other Wild guys, try to find the perfect lineup and try to do well in a tournament. And I really, really liked that. So I got the taste of playing tournaments, and that's why I wanted to do the swap at some point. And then randomly, Meaty, a very strong Standard player, was looking for some players for his Team Barrage for the new thing in Standard that was the team standings and team tournament aspect of Hearthstone. And then I just kind of joked around and said he could pick me. And he already found another guy, but he said he wanted me on the team. If I wanted to, because he also played some Wild and he knew that I had some skills from there, so I could be on the team anyways in some other form as like a Wild streamer or something. And then I just thought, why don't I just try Standard out? If I'm getting on a team, I should also pay them back by kind of tryharding. So I tried out Standard for the Standard Season 2, which was from April to July, I believe. And I actually made it to playoffs because of that, because I got some high finishes. From there, I just kind of felt that this was the way to go. I, I felt the rush that I felt in Wild when I went for high finishes. I felt the same thing when I went for high finishes in Standard and in the tournaments that I participated in. And that rush had kind of died for me in Wild because I had already finished number one, so I had tried that. And there's only one tournament a year, so to feel it again, I felt that I had to push myself to something different. And that's also where I am now. Now I am actually on the team standings team in Barrage because two guys dropped out, so there was room for me.
Yeah, and your team was doing pretty well at one point.
Yeah, it was. Like, actually, we're struggling this season. We had this season is half done, and we hadn't really had the performances we wanted to. We were really close in the first month of this season with, like, I think 3 hours to go when the season ended, the month ended. We had a triple top 25, but then our RNG just stopped and we didn't finish where we wanted to. But yeah, the team has been doing pretty well overall. Also, just I think it's very cool that I start on a team that is actually going for team standings. Not every team is doing that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work to get into that. So you talked a little bit about the tournament scene, and you've been playing up against some of the best of the best. Like you said, you were in the EU playoffs, and then you were at a tour stop last weekend. So we did the show this week. Tell us a little bit about the tournament experience and how you're feeling that's going.
I actually think, at least for me, that the tournaments in Hearthstone are the most fun experiences as a pro player. Yeah, if you can call me a pro. I'm not really a pro because I'm not living off of this in any way. I'm living off of of studying. But like trying to go for the big tournaments, I think this is by far the most fun part of it, because the community is so so cool. I like the personalities of Hearthstone players. All of them very friendly, very thoughtful. You can talk about whatever you want and just have fun with other games. Like I was in Norway as you pointed out. A week ago or something, and we were just having fun playing chess and table soccer and pool and all kind of stuff, just having fun. And I also think it's really interesting from a player, like from a Hearthstone perspective, because it playing best of fives and having to figure out lineups and counter other lineups and stuff. It doesn't feel as random as playing on ladder, because playing on ladder is best of one format, and you don't have a ban, you don't really have anything to go off. You just have to play the best decks and figure out the current meta, and then and that's how you have to do it. But in tournaments, you have to predict what kind of lineups do you think you will see, and how are the stats that people look at, how are they wrong, so you can abuse that, because people will bring some decks too often because they look at those stats and stuff. So it's very, very complex, exactly what you want if you're going for an edge over the other players.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So preparing for these events is something relatively new for me, because, I mean, I've only played in the Wild events and all that stuff, but one of our hosts, Ray, is a pro player. We've also had some other pro players come on, and everyone seems to prepare for tournaments a little bit differently. So what's going through your mind, and how do you prepare for some of these events?
I think I'm learning from every event I'm participating in, and I can see a difference in my approach to preparation every time I play a new tournament. For example, in the last tournament I just played, it was my second tournament playing Last Hero Standing format, which is basically, instead of you have to win with every deck, it means you have to beat every deck. So what I learned here is that you can go for a lot of different compositions of decks. Like what I went for was to have 2x2 very similar decks, because it's very hard for them. If they want to ban an archetype, they can't really do it because you have two. So the other deck they don't ban will then sweep them. But what I learned was that it is very, it also has a lot of weaknesses, because if they ban one deck and the second one is not performing in this particular match, if it's losing a favorable, then you're basically, you're in trouble. So next time I'll probably do something different. But overall, what I'm doing and what I think is very correct to do is to look at the stats, like Hearthstone replay, just get huge sample sizes of stats, look at them, but be critical, because you know that everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's looking at this. So if you find numbers that are slightly off, it's really valuable to you, because you can expect that to be brought too much, and you can abuse it. If you, let's say you think Malaga's Druid versus Evenlock is not unfavored, even though the stats say so, then you can expect people to not target Malaga's Druid enough, so it might be performing super well in the tournament, stuff like that.
Do you think that's related to people not understanding specific intricacies of the matchups, and the data doesn't show that, so you get the edge that way? Or is it just that the data, like, how, in your mind, how does the data change? Like, how is it off from being spot on? Because, I mean, I'm relatively new to data sources, being a Wild player, because all of
Yeah, so I think it could be a lot of different things. Sometimes it is just the average player in Legend or Legend to rank 5 or whatever your filters are. Sometimes the average player just doesn't understand the deck as well as the good player or as you expect yourself to do. And that means that, let's say Torquaggle Druid is not winning every game against Art Warrior, even though maybe I think it should. Because if you play it correctly throughout the entire game, you will win every time. Stuff like that. So maybe the average player doesn't play it as well as the best player. Another thing is just that sometimes the data, the stats will show things that are slightly off just due to variance or randomness or small sample sizes and stuff. So it can be different things. And that's also something that you need to recognize the reason to understand fully how to abuse it. But I think that is the two main ways: either players just not understanding how to play it, or stats just being random, like stats sometimes are. Oh, and also one last thing is that all tournaments right now are open deck list, and that can sometimes change it a lot. Let's say on ladder, all you see is Sue. So when you play against the Warlock, you mulligan for Sue. That means that all the Evenlock matchups will probably be too unfavored for the Evenlock too favored for the Evenlock, because everybody in the tournament will mulligan correctly against the deck. And that's actually also, that's quite important, figuring out how open deck list format changes the matchups.
Sure, definitely. And then tech cards come into play too, because your opponent knows what you're playing, and then and it's like, oh, do I play around this? There was one, I was talking with someone at some point, they said they like to run a lot of one-ofs in tournaments because it forces your opponent to play around those outs. But
it's just it forces your opponent to make mistakes, because sometimes you have to play around the one-off MC tech and sometimes you shouldn't, and it can be a hard decision.
Yeah. So the transition between Wild and Standard, this is all new to the Standard field, because we don't have these great sources of data in Wild. So how did that transition come about? Or was it just something that you had picked up? Were you working with other players?
Why I transitioned, or how the formats are different?
How the formats are different.
Yeah, sure. I've talked about this a little bit before, and I think the main difference is the stats, basically. And it's not only being able to look at the stats and being able to just find optimized deck lists. That is obviously one part of Standard that is really easy to play with the best decks, but it's also different in having a lot of stats that tells you how to mulligan, and that tells you what cards are core in certain matchups and stuff. In Wild, I think it's much more about just feeling and being comfortable with decks, because It's not possible to have stats or other players tell you how to play a deck perfectly. You really need to rely on your own experience. And in Wild, if I played Reno Priest, and I talked to a lot of other guys that also hit top 10, they would play the deck very different and mulligan differently and stuff. In Standard, everybody's doing the same thing. And people are mulliganing, like at least on top of ladder, like the very best players. All of them are mulliganing very close to the same way and playing close to the same way and realizing the same win conditions. So it's Standard is very much about all of the very small differences and all the very small edges you can get from positioning your minions correctly and always realizing the small out you have in this position instead of just conceding and stuff. It's very much about all the small edges. In Wild, you can get a lot of bigger edges just by finding a new tech card that nobody thought about, or figuring out that you have to mulligan differently in this matchup, or just in general. Like, a great example that I have is when Reno Priest or Kasagas Priest was popular in both formats, in Standard, everybody was mulliganing in the mirror only for Anduin and Raza and Kasagas, I think. Some people actually didn't even do that. But in Wild, a lot of people kept all the draw cards. And when some Wild players figured out, oh, you don't do that because you have so much draw, you only keep the three combo pieces, Kasagas, Raza, and Anduin. They just got a huge boost in win rate.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they just won the mirror almost every time, because in Wild, it was not easy to recognize that was just the way to go. You couldn't look at Hearthstone replay and sort by mulligan win rate and just see that those cards were always on top, so you only want those. In a similar way, there were so many different ways to build that deck, and I think that's the case for almost every deck in Wild. There are so many different ways to build it, and either there is just one correct way that people haven't figured out yet, or there is one correct way to, like, in every single meta, so you have to swap tech cards all the time to get the most out of your deck. And I think that is very different. That is something that also, when I made the swap into Standard, it made Standard seem so simple for me, because all these big decisions I had to make in Wild, I didn't have to make them there. I didn't have to think about how do I build this list, how do I optimize it to this meta, and how do I do my mulligan, when do I use my removal. All that stuff was kind of set in stone already. So I had to figure out, oh, I need to find all these small edges, otherwise I'll not perform. Like, I would just get 50% win rate in top 100. So I need to find all the small edges to actually get the advantage that I usually got from all the bigger things.
That's really interesting to see that change. Do you think that that's just based off of the player size, or is that like maybe a card pool size thing? Because one of the things that I think about Wild is just there's so many options that, I mean, based off of the player size, there's just so much that hasn't been explored.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both, because player size also equals stat size. And I think the amount of stats are very important. Especially for the mulligan thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a ton of games, the mulligan stats will be super accurate and you should just almost listen to them every time. But I also think that the card pool makes it much harder and much harder to find the perfect deck list, and much easier to find similar deck lists that are equally good.
Yeah, because one of the things that I see a lot in Wild too, when I'm playing against, let's say, a Reno Lock, there could be 40 to 50 cards that someone could potentially put in a list, and then playing around certain, you got to know what to play around. Whereas in Standard, I'd assume that most decks are like a 34 to 36 cards you'll see. So you know what you're going to expect, and it becomes more about mechanics and preparing and doing the mulligan and all that stuff, rather than, okay, is this guy holding a random Geist or something like that?
Yeah, for sure. I think that is also a very big difference in the formats. And there are some times where it's not true in Standard. For example, I was talking to Monsanto a couple of days ago about, in Standard we have Mildred with Talkwaggle, and we have Mechathune Druid. And the lists are super similar. It's basically the same list, but with two different win conditions. And until the end of the game, you'll not know which list it is. So you have to play around both. And it's super weird because you have to play around it in two completely different ways. So sometimes it's not the case, but usually it is, as you say. You have like a 26, 28 core deck. And then you have, do you play MC Tech or do you play Oaken Package or do you play Giggling or do you play a random staff or something? But you know the core, and you know when you've seen three cards, you know the rest of the deck usually. So I'm not exactly sure what your question was, but I hope I answered.
That was definitely good. Let's dip a little bit into some of the meta reports. So you and I were on the Tempo Storm meta snapshot team for Wild, but has the transition between Standard and Wild changed your opinion of like the Tempo Storm, the Vicious Syndicate meta snapshots? I know they have different purposes, but
I actually think it has changed my mindset a lot on these, and I'm not sure if I was going back to Wild, I'm not sure if I would consider the Temple Zone meta snapshot the best source anymore. It might be the case, but from a Standard perspective, expert snapshots or expert tier lists are not really a thing anymore. You have too much data, you have too many stats that you can look at, so it will always be more accurate to look at either Vicious Syndicate, but actually I would just prefer every time to look at Hearthstone Replay, look at the stats myself, and dive into them and understand them myself. But that's also because I want to know where all where the tier list come from, etc.
Sure, but I think that's how you get the edge.
Yeah, exactly. And in Standard, stats are just king of everything. If you don't use stats, I think you are giving yourself a disadvantage from the beginning. Even if you don't believe that stats are accurate, just looking at stats as an expert you can talk to, like you look at the stats and you say, oh, okay, the stats say this, but I think I disagree, but maybe there's some truth to half of it. Maybe he wants to keep, like the stats want to keep this in the mulligan. I'm not sure if I agree, but there has to be some truth to it. So why do the stats want to keep Vanish as Questro, even though it's like the most expensive card? Oh, okay. It's because you need a board clear, and it's also kind of a bouncer, stuff like that. And in Wild, I don't think the stats are good. I've looked at the stats for a bit on Hearthstone Replay, and it seems like there just simply isn't enough. You have to look at rank 10, rank 25 stats to actually have enough. So I could imagine expert opinions being very valuable in Wild, unless you are a strong player that has your own opinions. I think they should always be a bit more valuable.
Sure, and that's mirroring my opinion as well. I think that in the early days of Hearthstone, like the Standard scene had that, but then just with the uproar of HS Replay, it just threw it out the window. But expert opinions are less important. It's also good to get a perspective other than your own. And then if you're not with other like Standard experts, it's interesting to see what other people say. So that's good as well. Mm-hmm. But so when you're preparing for these events, do you do any like special preparation type things? Like practicing with decks or like trying different mulligan? Like you said, you were talking about mulligan, like deciding mulligan strategies. What's your process with that?
It depends on how much time I have. I think the ideal way to do it would be to, depending on what time of the year it is. If it's right after an expansion, you need to do a lot of work to test out the different options and new stuff going on. But let's say the meta is fairly settled. I think what you need to do is, first thing, you look at previous tournaments with the same format. What did people bring? Then you try and figure out how has the meta changed since then. How will people react to looking at that meta? If there is a lot of token druid, maybe you should expect more slow warlocks with Defiant, for the next tournament and stuff like that. Then you need to figure out, okay, so how can I abuse this? And that's where I look at stats a lot. I look at what decks do well against the decks I expect, what decks fit well together, and how do I cover my weaknesses? If it's last year standing, you can't be very weak to one deck. If it's Conquest, it's really good to be weak to one deck, because that deck can only get one win. So also depends on the format. And then I think I actually spend a lot of time just sitting and think, how popular in percentages do I think every deck I face will be? Because I can put that into the stat machine, and they can tell me that, like, Aegis Replay can tell me against this meta with 5% even log, 10% quest rogue, etc., these deck are performing the best. So it's actually it's really specific. If you figure out the exactly the meta you're gonna face, the stats will do the work you need, unless the stats are inaccurate. And then after that, I can start practicing different lineups. How do they feel? Am I comfortable with these decks? What tech cards do I think will fit this the meta I am expecting? And I can test some matchups to figure out, is Evenlog as unfavored against Mali Druid as the stats say? By playing, let's say I play 10 games against a teammate or something to figure that out. But depending on how much time I have, I will not go through all these steps in a lot of detail.
Sure, the things that you can skip over, your time is spent better elsewhere. I definitely understand managing your time as one of the...
Yeah, I mean, it depends a bit. Like, maybe I'm bringing decks I'm already pretty comfortable with. I've played a lot on ladder. Maybe I don't need to play test a lot of matchups or spend a lot of time on tech cards, because I already know against this meta, these techs will always be correct, because I don't want a Geist in my even luck when there's no, Odd Warrior or Druid or something.
Sure.
So it depends where you can, like, step lightly and just jump over it. But usually people will not have enough time to do this process in very high detail.
Yeah. So you were a very big ladder grinder in Wild, getting many rank one finishes. And so how is the transition from playing on the ladder from Wild to Standard? Because I know, do you prefer the Wild grind or the Standard grind? What's your opinion on that?
Actually, it feels very, very similar, because the ladder system is the same, so it rewards the same thing. Basically, it rewards playing a lot so you can get a streak where you high roll. And in Wild, you need to get an insane win rate over a lot of games. But it's also easier to get a high win rate, because the competition is not as high.
Sure.
In Standard, I think, like, let's say in Wild, you probably need 65% win rate to get number one over a lot of games. Probably even late season, it was probably 67, 68% to hit number one for sure. In Standard, I think you can hit number one with probably 60, 61% win rate over quite some games. And the difference in how it feels is that the losses don't feel as bad in Standard, because in Wild you had to win more than two games to make up for a loss, and probably you lost to some stupid thing a lot of the time. Like, a lot of the losses would be to Barnes and Fora or whatever, because Wild is a format like that, where there are high impact cards and there are a lot of them in every deck. So I think it feels better in Standard, but you also have to grind more because the competition is just higher. I have hit number one two times in Standard for the last, what is this, 3 or 5 months or something. And in Wild, I would usually be number one for 5-6 days every season. So it's very different.
Yeah, and that's got to be the player base related, because, I mean, you're not getting 10-minute queues in Standard. That's one of the things that I'm not particularly happy about.
Shoes are smaller and the competition is higher. If you hit number one in standard, you will not hold it for a day. Like, in wild, I think at some point I hit number one and I just held it for a week without playing because people were camping top 10, just like they do in standard. A lot of people camp top 10, but there will also be a lot of guys that just go for number one, especially early.
Sure. So do you, you said earlier that you like tournaments over the ladder grind, but both of them combined together when you're going for HCT points. Where do you typically find more of your points coming from, the ladder or from tournaments?
Well, I'm still pretty new, right? But I can say season two, where I started playing standard, which was here from April to July, I got 39 points out of 43 from ladder and 4 points from tournaments. And I only went to two tournaments, so that's also part of the reason. I think most players just get almost all the points from ladder. And then if you get like between 5 or 10 points from tournaments, you should be really happy and it will help you a lot. Just getting 1 point or 4 points means a lot, because the ladder system works in 3 point intervals. So it's easy to get 36, 39, 42, or these are the easy numbers to get. So if you get 1 point, so you go to 40, 43, or 37 instead, it means you are above a huge clump of players that are only getting points from ladder. So just getting a few points from tournaments is really, really important in your climb for playoff.
Sure, cool. So what do you think about the current standard metagame? Are you a fan of it? You want to see some changes? How do you feel about it?
I actually hate it. I actually really, really dislike the current meta. And I think it's partly because it has been the same for so long. And I think it's partly because it's just unhealthy. And I've been wondering a couple of times why is the meta always unhealthy? I don't think the meta is always unhealthy, but it always seems like a lot of players think it's unhealthy. And I think it's because the same meta for a long period of time is not great in Hearthstone, because Hearthstone is too simple for that. It will mean that you have to find smaller and smaller edges and the deck list will be perfectly refined and stuff. So I just think change is the healthy thing for Hearthstone. I made a tweet about just always having a balance patch between two expansions. I think it would be very healthy because the meta would change a bit. And balance patches have always been healthy, I think. It has always addressed some problem. Sometimes they could have done it in a different way, but I think it has always been a healthy change for ladder.
Sure. And then the Boomsday expansion was not super impactful with deck archetype creation or adding many interesting cards to change up specific matchups. So I feel that
Boomsday was like really special because it added a few cards that were really strong, but it added them to already existing archetypes, like Odd Rogue got Giggling Adventure. All the Druids got Florist or Floop and stuff like that. So it didn't change a lot. But another point that I didn't make about the current meta is that Odd Warrior and Quest Rogue are two decks that polarize the entire ladder system right now, because these two decks have very, very polarized matchups in two completely different directions. If you look at Hearthstone Replay, you will almost always see Odd Warrior and Quest Rogue being countered and counter the same deck. Like, if one does well, the other does poorly. And there are almost no, like, 50% matchups. So that means that either you will counter one deck and lose to the other, or you will counter the other deck and lose to the Odd Rogue. like if you can't outwear, you lose the quest book.
Sure.
And so people decide to play either Outwear or quest book, or they play a deck that counters either, or they play Druid because Druid is just strong. And that creates metas where either you have at 20% and an 80% matchup on ladder, or you have Druid versus Druid, which is not the most fun matchup to play because it's all about ramp, and it might come down to tech cards anyways, like do you get an early tweak or whatever. So I think that's part of the reason why the meta right now is not enjoyable for me, at least.
Sure.
That Odd Warrior and Quest Rogue are so polarizing.
And while that may add a wrinkle to the tournament scene, like you said earlier, ladder is a best of one. So you can't go in and mitigate around these very polarizing matchups.
Yeah, and also you can't ban. Like if you're looking at last year's standing, just look at Oslo, where I just went. I actually thought Quest Rogue would be a bad deck to bring. But I had to bring it because I knew that a lot of people would plan on banning Quest Rogue. So if I don't have it, they can just get a free ban on whatever deck I'm playing that is good against them. So I had to bring Quest Rogue even though I didn't want to. And it got banned in all of my games except for one. I didn't even get to play it. And the other deck, the other match where it didn't get banned, Odd Warrior got banned. Because these are the decks that are super rewarding to ban because they have so polarized matchups. So if I ban Quest Rogue, I get access to half of the entire deck pool that loses to Quest Rogue. And if I ban Odd Warrior, it's the other way around. So, but even though these decks will still be in a tournament like that, it is much more interesting to be able to ban one because it gives you a lot of options that are not existing on ladder.
Sure. Is there, everyone always talks about, oh, if there was a ladder system where you could ban it, that'd be great. But unfortunately, Blizzard mentioned no tournament mode in that recent post that they put up. And that's unfortunate. But also in that post, they mentioned the wild scene and how they weren't really sure about where wild should go in the future. So as someone who is fairly vocal about the wild scene, what do you want to see the future of wild turn into? What changes do you want to see Blizzard make if you were lead Blizzard designer of Hearthstone?
I think I've been very passionate about this in the past, and I probably still am deep down, but the one thing that I hated them for saying, that they have been saying for a long time, and I might be the only one that doesn't like it. Like, other people might like this, but they are having this statement, should wild be wild, and they don't know. And I think it's like, it's the dumbest thing to say, and I don't think it's even a question, because they called wild wild at some point, and that was not because they wanted it to be wild. They just had to give the Magic the Gathering legacy format another name, right? So they say
exactly,
that should
yeah.
be wild. But in no way does that translate to wild actually having to be a crazy format where weird and wild stuff happens. And I think having a format that is just going wild out of nowhere will never be a healthy format, because wild basically means stupid shit needs to happen.
Exactly.
And it has to happen at almost any point in the game. There has to be able to happen some blowout thing that just loses you the game. And Hearthstone is too consistent for that. If a thing can blow up and win you the game turn 7, it will do it very often. So I don't think wild should be wild at all. And I think what I do think about the wild scene, what should happen about the wild format, is people just want a format similar to standard. They want a format with different cards that is still being balanced and that is still not being decided on turn 4, depending on if you get an insane start or you don't, or if your curves turns into a blowout or something. At least that's what I would want wild to be. It's just an alternative to standard where you can play all the cards you love and hate from the past. And I think that's really the direction that they should go for. And we saw the nerf, Naga Sea Witch nerf. That was a nerf that nerfed something wild to not exist or to be not wild anymore. And I think it was the healthiest nerf Wild has ever seen. And I don't think it's even a question. Those nerfs should happen. Also, Starline and Druid right now, and to some extent it goes all the way to Maladruid and Togdruid or whatever Druid you want to play. Like, this is a deck that's doing something wild that is not healthy. So Wild should not be wild. It should be balanced with other cards.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this comes down to combo decks, really, because the quote-unquote wildness of everything is mostly aligned to, like, a combo where, like, I mean, you can consider Naga, Sea Witch, you're playing all your stuff out, 30-plus health on turn 5 or whatever, and then, like, I think a lot of the things that are wild in their mind is just broken combos, so...
Yeah, wild is just means broken, and imagine, like, they could have decided any word instead of wild. They could have said, should this format... Let's say, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, they called the format old, and then they asked, should the old format be old? So they just don't change anything. Like, there's no thought that when they, at least I don't think so, when they named it Wild, that it was because they wanted wild stuff to happen. So it's just randomly, this statement came out of nowhere because they don't want to balance stuff, or maybe they don't know how to balance stuff. That's at least my interpretation, that this statement came out because they don't really want to do stuff, or they don't know what to do.
Yeah, one of the issues you run into, too, is that there's... the wild scene compared to standard is, I think, at Legend, the last approximation was, like, there. It's somewhere between a 15th and a 20th the size of the standard scene. And so that's tiny. And I think that not enough voices from at least the high wild side have really gotten through to Blizzard. I saw you put a tweet out because they said, hey, let's hear some of your suggestions. And then you said, have we been yelling at the wrong place?
Yeah, for sure. Because actually, a lot like people like Get Meowth, Control the Board, Dane, like a lot of people actually tell what they want. And I'm pretty sure if we asked a Blizzard employee, what do you think the Wild community wants, or I'm pretty sure they have some sort of answer that is pretty accurate. I think it actually comes down to Blizzard always, they have always been this company that really only care about changing stuff that changes the money they get out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And that has been the direction they have been going for in all their games at all times. And I think it's very healthy from a game designer, game company perspective, because that's how you get more money to build new games and do whatever you want. But it also has this downside of making your community feel that you don't care about them. You only care about earning money, which is probably also true. Not from the designer perspective, but from the big boy decision perspective, where they decide, should they invest 3 employees into Wild or 0 or 1? And I think that is one of the main reasons why Wild is not getting a lot of attention, because it will not earn them a lot of money to make a good wild format. It might even hurt them money-wise, because even though people have another look at wild will in the long run be a cheaper format to play, and if people don't dust their wild cards at some point, they will not be able to, like, they can just play wild and add 1-2 cards from the new expansions and they'll be fine, or they can just add nothing and play a deck that is maybe 0.5% worse than the best deck with the 1 card upgrade where you play Giggling Inventor instead of Sludge Belcher or something. Sure. So I think it comes down to them actually having to make other decisions than in Wild to earn the money they need to earn.
Sure. One of the things that we were thinking about is potentially changing maybe the dust cost for wild cards. But following along those lines, that's not probably going to be something that happens, because then you run.
Yeah, that's exactly what they don't want to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas that would be really healthy for the format. You get a bunch of people involved, but unfortunately, that goes against their bottom line. And I don't know, like they're not like you said, they're not big on making decisions that impact them negatively financially.
Yeah, or let's say they could do a lot of things. They could also. Yeah, for example, when cards rotate out, they give you 50% of the dust for the cards, and if you dust them, you only get 50% back, right? So they incentivize you to not dust your wild cards. They could do a lot of stuff to improve the format or make people play the format more, but it goes directly against the other point, which is they need to make as much money as possible from this game. And I think that's really where Wild is going to die, because both of these things cannot happen. If they don't want to lose money on Wild, they will just have to make Wild suck or not address it at all.
Well, they could also go to a different approach where you get more interest by holding more, like, then again, like, holding more tournaments is something that could get more attention, because the first Wild Open and was spectacular, going in and having all of that. The second one, even though the format was a little bit janky, I think that was a huge success as well, because it brought a lot of eyes onto the Wild format, and I bet a lot of people played Wild during that period who hadn't touched it in a really long time.
So yeah, I think, like, these tournaments are really good.
But the issue is that Blizzard does have to invest money into the tournaments in order to, like, get something going.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much money it would cost to make a tournament like that. But it's so long ago. But I made a Reddit post about small things they could do to improve the Wild format, and I don't think it would cost them a lot. Let's see if I can remember. I think I have three different ones. The first one was letting Wild and Standard have separate season chests. So if you hit, let's say you hit rank 5 in both formats, you get two chests, one with golden wild cards and one with golden standard cards, instead of only getting one chest. And the second one is letting you buy wild packs with all the cards that are in the wild format. You can open all of them in this one pack that you can buy from in-game gold. And the last one is exactly what you talked about here. Holding, let's say, just two or three tournaments a year, probably one for each standard season. So you have a fall wild tournament, a spring wild tournament, and a summer wild tournament. So you basically up it to two or three tournaments a year, because every time these tournaments were held, a lot of, like, at least some streamers started playing Wild, started testing this out. I know I was testing stuff with Fino and Sixo and different players in both tournaments. And, you know, when streamers start playing the format, people remember, oh, this is Secret Paladin, this was pretty obnoxious, or this was pretty funny, or I remember Pirate Warrior, I want to play that again. So it will give the viewers a lot of reason to start trying out Wild again. So I think these three things, I don't think it would cost them a lot. Maybe the tournament thing would be a small issue because it could collide with standard tournaments or something. But the season chest and buying wild packs with in-game gold, these seem really easy to actually implement.
Yeah. And if you want to go to the extreme and really start clashing with standard, you could. I made a video about some of the things that Blizzard could do, and one of the things that I thought of was for a wild ladder finish to go in and award someone half the HCT points of, like, a respective standard finish, because then everyone would flood over to the wild ladder, and then like, it would be a backup in case you don't finish in standard for some of the pros, and then once all the pros go over wild, you'll have more resources, you'll have just more players coming in and make the format a little bit more competitive. But then you run into the issues.
The issue with that is that it would not be a backup, because you would actually need to play both.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, you could actually make it in a way where you could only get points from either format, like from one format or the other. So let's say it would only be relevant if you would fail in standard, then the wild could take over. So let's say finishing top 25 in standard gives you 15 points, but in wild, finishing top 25 would give you 7.5 points. So if you fall down the ladder on the last day in standard, you might still have a wild rank to hold on to, and you can try there instead. Kind of like pros right now are trying different servers. So they're going for top 25 on two or three different servers at the same time in case they low roll one server so they have the other one. That could be one way of doing it.
Yeah, you just have to make sure that it's a lower incentive because standard is obviously the competitive format, and you don't want to take that away by just putting the wild points in. But I think that something like that could definitely bring in an influx of new players and, I don't know,
I
spice it up
think
the
it could.
scene.
I'm not sure if if that's the direction I want Wild to go. I think it would be cool. Or they could do something similar, like also like Team One Trek is doing, right? Where you get some points for to compete in the wild tournaments that I was talking about. Let's say you have three, you collect points to go to these instead of having kind of random signups or one top 64 deciding everything or something like that. You could also make a system like that because there would be some money in the in these wild tournaments, so there would still be incentive. But basically, it just for me, it comes down to, do they want to invest some time or maybe a little money into the format or not? Because there are a lot of easy fixes or easy improvements in this format, no matter if you think wild should be wild or boring or balanced or whatever.
The unfortunate thing is that we have to wait on Blizzard to take action. That was one of the things when we wrote the one trick video. We went through and we're like, "Hey, thanks for addressing our format. We never hear anything from you." So that's one of the things that we're like the redheaded stepchild of the game because Blizzard just doesn't. The funny thing is like. They obviously look at the format, right? They went through and they nerfed the priest mech. I don't remember what the name of it is. Like it's not the heal bot, but
Oh yeah, I don't remember, but I know what it does. It was a life steal, a priest thing.
And so they changed that. So they're like, "Oh, we don't want to have this be completely broken." But I think that that's like a half measure because if someone tries to pull that one off, it's not like a competitive type thing. It's
Yeah,
like
would that even be a bigger issue than what we have now, like Psychmelon? Because
I
I was
doubt it,
looking at that nerf and I thought that would not be breaking the game. It would be like a more consistent Reno that could also deal some damage or something, but it would actually be possible to play around it, or like you just don't damage them for a lot or whatever.
That adds in some counterplay. That's the one thing that I feel that while, even if you go in and you do all these wild things, I think that you need to introduce counterplay. And whereas, like, with the Star Aligner, like, Dirty Rat just doesn't cut it, which is shocking in saying, right? Because, like, Dirty Rat can deal with Dogwaggle Druid, it can deal with Malygos Druid. And I think that if you did, like, Star Aligner is just so robust that you have so many ways, like even the only thing you lose to is getting your Aviana pulled. Everything else you'll be able to go and pull the combo off anyway. So, I don't know.
I haven't played that deck at all actually, but I've played against it a bit and I've seen like how it works and stuff. And to me it also it seems like the combo is doing too much at the same time. If you are losing a lot on board, you can just play the combo and not lose on board. If you need to OTK a lot of decks that can't get armor, you can just do it with that combo. If you don't have the entire combo, so you can only deal 14 damage, you usually win with the combo. And you can do it super early, right? So, and also, as you're pointing out, it has so many combo pieces that pulling out minions or transforming minions will usually allow you to do like half a combo or even the entire combo anyways. Or if they pull them out and can't kill them, you can even brewmaster the minions back to your hand if you need to.
And then the minions are big, so they can just whack you in the face too if you pull them out and you can't deal with them.
And you need to pull them out when you have maybe 6 mana because they are ramping up so much, right?
Yeah, because it'll
So
be
it's
their turn
basically like
nine,
the
turn
Naga
10.
Sea Witch problem where it's doing something stupid too early. And I also think Dane talked about that in a video, that at this point there needs to be a turn limit where you're saying like these stupid combos can't happen before or after turn 9 or whatever. You need to figure out what is the turn limit that Blizzard wants for stupid broken combos to happen. And I think at this point it should never be before turn 8 because the aggro decks need to be able to pressure before it can happen.
Yeah, that's one of the bad things, especially the class being druid, right? Where you have branching paths, you have ferocious howl, things that'll give you armor and have game against aggro, right? Whereas, I, to be perfectly honest, if there was a combo deck like that in priest, I think that I would be okay with it because you could at least deal 30 damage using an aggro deck by turn 6. Like, that's a doable thing. But like, I can't deal 50 damage by then.
Yeah, we can look at similar combos to these druids. We can look at, like, Reno Priest as an example right now. It's still, even after the nerf, it can deal more than 30 damage in a turn, but it will do it later. And if I'm not wrong, Aviana, like, Starliner Druid will usually deal 30 damage. Maybe it's possible to do more, but it deals 30 damage too early. Reno Priest will often face too much armor to win with the 30 damage combo. Another example is Exodia Mage. Has infinite damage, but it has infinite damage much slower. So it's not a problem in the format. And I don't think even if a Druid would be nerfed, I don't think these decks would be a huge problem in the format. Maybe Reno Priest would be strong because there would be less armor in the meta, but I think it really comes down to how early you can do the combo and Druid just having so many powerful cards in general.
Yeah, the Druid, that's just one of the things about the core base of the Druid class. Like, the core of Druid, the only good cards are Wild Growth, Naturalize, and I mean, they've nerfed the rest, but due to that fact, one of the things that I've seen is that in Standard, in order to make good Druid decks, you need to put good Druid cards. Whereas a class like Rogue, where you have a really strong core with Vanish, Prep, they can't really introduce that many good Rogue cards. So over time, in the Eternal format, you're going to have Druid getting a lot of good cards, and you're going to have Rogue not getting as many good cards. So ultimately, down the line, that can really shift where everything's going to end up, because you'll just have Druid consistently getting good cards, and then like classes like Rogue not getting as many.
I actually think, I think the issue you're addressing is correct. But I don't think in this specific scenario, I don't think it's the case. I think Druid has a very specific core that is just super strong. That is Ramp. And also right now, UI is also like ramping into UI. But I think in Wild, it will never matter. There will always be insane stuff to ramp into. But I think Druid is an example where you still have very strong base cards or basic cards, classic cards, whatever. But right now, Druid also has strong non-basic cards, which is why it's so dominating both formats. I think if you look at Standard only and Druid, I think Druid has just one card too much that is very strong. I think if you look at Plague, UI, Wild Growth, if one of these were nerfed, maybe up them one mana, even though UI would be unplayable, we could just say remove UI. I think if let's say Wild Growth was not a card, all of a sudden Druid would need to put in early game to not fall behind because they don't have insane stuff to win the board over apart from Plague. So just nerfing one of these would change the dynamic of Druid so much. If Plague was one turn later, aggro would usually just push and not having to play around Plague on turn 4 because they know it's coming in 2 turns. So I think that's where Druid is right now. But the other point you were saying about like Rogue not being able to get a lot of stuff is also true. And I think it's true for Rogue in particular, and maybe it's true for Hunter just because Hunter has such a strong hero power. So if they get strong early game cards, they will just win the game too fast. And if they get strong late game cards, it won't really matter because Hunter is just too far behind on late game cards. Mm-hmm. The hero power is not a late game hero power. So I think it is an issue for Wild also that the classic set determines how strong cards each class can get.
Sure, yeah. All right, well, shifting gears, a while back, a couple months ago, or maybe it was a month ago, you put out a tweet saying that you were working on an esports psychology project. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about that and then what's going on with it?
Yeah, I can talk a lot about it. I think it depends on for how long I talk about it. But basically, I made a trade too long ago where I asked if people would be interested in something like this, because I've been studying psychology for a long time now, and I'm done with my education soon. So I have a lot of thoughts about Heartstone and psychology and how these things mix together. And then when I figured out that people would actually be interested in something like this, I decided that I wanted to make some either articles or videos or something about this. And I haven't had a lot of time, so I wish I would have been able to already post some things and see how it's received and if I should do more in or if I should go in a different direction or whatever. But I've been busy with a lot of stuff, so I haven't gotten to that part yet. But I have written down a lot of thoughts about what it would be about.
Do you have any
And
specific topics that you're thinking of,
yeah,
or?
I can talk a little bit about specific topics. Basically, how the format is probably gonna be is it will be kind of nerdy, I think, because I do want to talk about the specific psychology theories that are in play in these different situations. So, for example, when if we talk about choking in high pressure situations, every player with an ambition to do something will have high pressure situations if they're going for rank 5 or legend or winning a dream hack or whatever. Everybody has a goal that at some point they will feel pressure, right? But if I'm talking about choking in high pressure situations, I would be talking about drive theory from psychology, arousal in general. And yeah, I can let's dive a little bit deeper into that, because what arousal means in psychology is simply like how aroused are you in the given situations? How hard is your heart pumping? Are you sweating? Are you feeling the heat? Are you is your adrenaline level very high or very low? And there's a lot of theory about in sport performances, where should that be? A lot of people, like the researchers, are talking about zones of optimal functioning, which basically is how aroused should you be if you want to perform in the best way possible in these situations. So when I will be writing about choking, I'll also get into how arousal theory and zone of optimal functioning come into play here, and how you can try and manipulate your arousal level, how you figure out if your optimal arousal level is very high or very low, and relaxation techniques, a lot of that stuff. But it will be with the focus on what are the theories saying, and how can you figure out where you are in relation to the theories? Because what a lot of coaches will do is that they have this package and they say, you are in this situation, you should do it like this. But psychology doesn't believe in an answer like that. Psychology believes in every individual having a different response to the theory and having to handle the theory in different ways. So I will only represent what does the theory say, and how can you identify where you are in relation to this? Basically, for every topic, it could also be motivation or what mindset you need to have in Hearthstone, or how your self-confidence goes into your performance, how you should practice to get the most out of your practice, all these topics that I have in my head right now.
Yeah, that's all really interesting. One of the things that you think about is, oh, you're at some level for a casual player, you're just playing a game and there's no like external influences out on that. But I mean, we all know tilt is a factor. There are a lot of things playing into playing a game of Hearthstone, and it's all mental. It's coming in, how do you affect, but it also that mentality does affect how your body responds. And that's all really interesting.
Yeah, and I think actually if I put in a few examples here and there, I think everybody will have experienced these things. And subjects like tilting and choking and ladder anxiety, all these labels we put on different things in Hearthstone have entirely different labels in psychology or sports psychology, but it's actually covering the exact same stuff. So Hearthstone players have developed a language, or maybe gamers in general have developed a language that describe psychological phenomenons, but without really using the terms that psychologists will use. So that is the link I think is super interesting to look at.
Are there any other things, you mentioned ladder anxiety and tilt. Are there any other things that you know off the top of your head that are like terms that we use as like a Hearthstone community that just off the top of your head have a correlation?
I think, I'm not sure. Choking is probably more in other games, right? But choking would be another one. There could also be, I guess that's also kind of tilting. I was thinking about being frustrated during the game because of random outcomes, but that's usually also just tilting. So I think actually tilting and ladder anxiety are the two main ones. And then there are things that probably don't have a label yet, like having the right mentality is something a lot of people talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And psychologists would talk about what kind of mindset you have from it's like a personality perspective, actually. Are you the kind of person that gets off from just improving all the time and being better at something? Or are you the person that gets off from getting the results you have strived for very long? Or what kind of personality do you have? And I think that's probably the main thing that where people can learn a lot from psychology is to identify what kind of default mindset do you have when you go into the game and want to improve at something. And what are the upsides and downsides of that? And when can you try and adapt a different mindset? When do you need to do that?
Yeah, wow. It's pretty interesting because I'm an amateur looking into this field, but I've always been very interested with this stuff. And I think that being able to look into psychology and say, people have already done a ton of research on this, but I'm just not really sure where to look for a lot of this stuff. So I think that this resource would be very interesting, and I'm definitely very interested in seeing how it turns out.
Yeah, I just hope I have enough time, and I hope I can manage to... I can create the right format for this, and I can create the right length of what I'm writing and actually hit the audience, because I'm sure if this is done right, a lot of people will get some interesting knowledge from this, but we'll see. It might also take a couple of things, but I think definitely there is stuff out there that is super important. For example, like I can talk about two things pretty fast without going too much in detail, but one thing that I would recommend due to having read about psychology is that when you practice for something, let's say you are playing ladder because you want to improve, you want to get better so you can win this tournament. And then you're sitting at a different situation is you're actually sitting at the tournament and playing because you win the tournament. What a lot of research suggests is that when you are practicing, you want to create an environment around you that feels exactly like the tournament you're playing. The mindset in your head has to be, this game is the tournament game you're playing, because you want to be able to feel, how does it feel to be in this situation, kind of pretend. And then on the other hand, when you are in at the tournament, you're playing this game, what you want to do is you want to try and pretend that you are just practicing and you're sitting at home with the shoes you would have at home. You probably have your glass of water next to you, and you just pretend that this is just practice because you want your arousal level to be lower than it would be in the tournament setting. And when you're practicing, you want it to be higher, so the two situations are more similar. And actually, you can see Stan Sivka a very long time ago, did exactly this when he was playing in a tournament. I don't remember when, but it was super long ago, and I picked up on it. He was taking off his shoes before every game, and he was taking with him a glass of water and a banana. And it was because that was exactly the way he played at home, and he wanted to create this environment to calm down and play like he played at home.
Man, that's really interesting.
That is one thing I would suggest people try to do that if they wanted to go to tournaments.
Yeah, get into a rhythm, into a routine, and then copy that routine later on. It's interesting bringing up the arousal level before you go in the event and then trying to minimize it when you're there. This is pretty smart.
Yeah, because and it's just like one thing is the arousal level, but the other part is just having the situation. You need to try and get the situations to be more similar. So the things you have learned at home are more easily accessible in your brain because you're in a similar situation. That's also something from research about memory, is that it will be easier for you to remember stuff if you are in a similar situation from where you learned it. One example is, let's say you are sitting in your room and you go to your kitchen because you need to get something to eat. Then you open your fridge, and you forget what you need to take, like what you went for, right? Then you go back to the same environment, sit down in your chair, and you instantly remember that you need to get a glass of milk or whatever, because now you're back in the same environment. And this is exactly the same in Hearthstone. Things you learn in the same environment will be more easily accessible in the exact same environment.
Man, I've done that once or twice.
Everybody has done it. Everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
And I said I had two things. Another thing that it's more of a mentality or kind of how you think about your brain. I think the brain works exactly like a muscle in the way you, like, if you want to exercise your brain, you have to do it in the same way where the brain needs to relax and where the brain needs perfect nutrition, perfect sleep, all this kind of stuff. So if you want to practice, you need to have a healthy sleep schedule. You need to eat properly, eat healthy food, drink a lot. And one thing, though, where the brain is different is that the brain does reflect on itself and it does memorize stuff. So one thing you never want to do is don't practice in the wrong way. Don't practice a bad habit. If you're sitting there 2 or 3 hours a day playing Hearthstone without really focusing 100%, you will create bad habits that are very hard to unlearn. So let's say you're playing from your intuition while watching a movie or something. Then you will create a default pattern or a habit where you just play from intuition. And when you create this default pattern, this is what you will, this will be your default response when you're in a high pressure situation. So when your arousal level goes up, you are more likely
to default back.
Default back to your default pattern, which means that you will make these mistakes. And it's super hard to unlearn these habits, because that's just how the brain is built. The more you do the same thing over and over, it will be more standardized, and it will be just even more default for every time you do it. So I think it's even worse to do something wrong multiple times in a row than not practicing at all.
Wow, that's interesting. But it does make sense. And
yeah, like if you are into like how the brain is built with neurons and stuff, it's just like basically what you're doing is you're making the same neurons fire over and over and over, and then the brain figures out, oh, this is happening a lot, I need to build more neurons here. So then every time you will have more neurons doing the wrong thing, and at some point you will have yeah, so much, so it's really hard to undo it. Same thing with smoking, kind of. It's slightly different in how it, like, why it works this way. But basically, the more you smoke, the more the brain realizes, oh my God, I need stuff for this, for all this, these cigarettes. So you'll crave it more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, so these are a lot, and you can probably hear that this is not, the thoughts have not come to an end yet, and a lot of stuff will develop out of this, hopefully. But I at least I have some stuff I know I want to talk about, or want to read about, write about, sorry.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely some great ideas, and I believe that you could make some really good stuff into that. And I remember, yeah, you had written some heart. I remember you wrote some Hearthstone articles beforehand, right?
I know, yeah, I've done some, and I think the closest thing I've done to not just the normal deck guide is when I wrote a guide about how you create good decks, and I believe that was the most read thing I've done. So, yeah, hopefully I can do some interesting stuff with this.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely excited to see it. So do you have anything else that you would like to discuss, or do you think we should wrap the show up?
Putting me on the spot here. what would be interesting to talk about? I think we have covered a lot of interesting topics, and I think the topics where I'm most close to an expert is psychology and wild and transitioning from wild to standard. So I think we've been around a lot of interesting stuff. I don't know if you have anything you want to ask me last second.
I've covered most of the things that I've wanted to touch on in this episode. I think we did a really good job. I really like this show, Sipiwi. I'm really glad to have you on. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was fun.
Yeah, sure. So, just wrap up. If you want to plug anything that you have, any shout outs you want to give, any social media accounts that people can follow you on, feel free to plug away here.
Yeah, I should probably do this. Also, for my team, I have to thank, I want to thank my sponsors, rather. And I probably don't remember all of them, but there is X Gamer Energy and Lucid Sound, Special Effect and BLK. And also thanks to the team, Justin Drell, for sending me to tournaments so I actually have stuff to talk about here, and so I get a lot of awesome experiences out in the world. I think that is probably it, even though my mom will be sad not to get a thank.
Sure. And did you list your social media account so that people can follow you?
Oh, yeah, sure, I can do that. Basically, right now I'm not really streaming a lot, but I still have a stream, Twitch.tv / CPW94. And I've said this for a long time, but hopefully I'll be able to stream more in the future. It's hard with the studying and also trying to try hard in Hearthstone at the same time. And then I have Twitter, which is probably my most active thing right now. I've been posting a lot of random stuff like deck lists and requests and raids at Twitter and wanting to get artifact beta keys and whatever. Yeah. So if you want to hear anything about me and also figure out when my psychology articles will be out, that's probably where you should go. That's twitter.com/CPW94 as well.
Awesome, sweet.
Oh, also, actually, a last thing is I just started coaching on Gamer Sensei, in Wild and Standard and whatever stats. It's basically on the website, but if you just search for Gamer Sensei CPW94, you can book lessons with me there if you're interested.
Cool, and I know a lot of our listeners do like to try to get better in the game, so it's definitely something worth looking into. As for me, you can find me as always on Twitter, DannyDonuts_HS. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Well Met. You can find more awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week at hearthstone.plisbro.com. You can tweet us at Well Met Podcast, and you can also email us. The email address is wellmet@blizzpro.com with any comments, questions, or any ideas for the show. Shout out to Jake Butineau for the intro music and the bumpers. And thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.